This audio comes to you from the Science of Mind archives.
There is a power for good in the universe, greater than you are, and you can use it.
The Institute of Religious Science presents Dr. Ernest Holmes, noted author and spiritual leader. In his talk for today on how God meets your needs, Dr. Holmes tells you how this power for good can bring you better health, more happiness, and greater prosperity through this thing called life.
Friends, we are all familiar with the expression that all things are possible to God. And we all believe that there is a power greater than we are, a power that knows how to and that can and will meet all our needs. And we all have needs. And of course, we would like to have these needs met. There is nothing wrong with our wishing to be happy or well or prosperous. And there is no harm in wanting people to like us. We certainly have a need both to love and to be loved. And so if we do believe that there is a power that can meet all our needs, suppose we turn the proposition around in another way and ask this question: why then shouldn't these needs be met? Why shouldn't God do it? This will at least give us a new approach to the possibility of faith and a new light on how to use it. Of course, you and I know that we do not coerce God, nor can we misuse the laws of nature. But we also know that when we do use nature's laws rightly, they are always ready and willing to comply with us. It is a true saying that the laws of nature obey us when we first obey them. And every advance in science, everything that has given modern life the luxury that it enjoys and the freedom, everything in the way of inventive genius and what we call the modern way of living, is a result of first learning how the laws of nature work and then complying with them, so that even nature produces more for us when we cooperate with her than she did before we knew how to use her laws. All of our inner conflicts are a result of a violation of the natural law of our being. No patient ever came to a psychologist or a physician whose illness did not rise out of some volition, a violation at some point of a natural law. This is why we say that disease is unnatural, whether it be physical or emotional or mental in its nature. Surely it would be a false statement to say that nature doesn't wish to keep us well and whole and happy. And I am one of those who happens to believe that neither nature nor God is testing us to see how much we can take from life. If we followed this procedure in scientific research, we wouldn't get anywhere. For the scientist always starts with the idea that there is much more freedom in nature than we have understood, and that when we comply with the laws of nature, we shall be liberated from a bondage that nature herself never imposed on us. It was imposed on us by our own ignorance. It was only a few years ago that the vast Imperial Valley was a waste place, a desert. We didn't think it wrong to build dams, to change water courses, or even to seed the clouds and cause them to give us rain. And see the result. The desert was made to blossom and bear fruit. Now we think of the Imperial Valley as a sort of a Garden of Eden. And right here is something we should not overlook. God, or this thing called life, had provided everything necessary to produce the abundant crops we enjoy. And just as soon as we complied with the laws of God, which are laws of nature, the miracle took place. We didn't feel that God was testing us or that God was trying to keep us in a state of semi-starvation because the desert hadn't yielded the fruit of the vine until we had first cultivated it. We took it for granted that it was part of the whole divine scheme of things, and that when we did our part, nature would do the rest. We might have said, why shouldn't God do it if we let him? And God did do it when we let him. But first, we had to learn how to put everything together in a right way. And as a matter of fact, when we did put things together rightly, everything else was automatic. The only difference with the man of ancient times and our own time is that we have learned how to cooperate with nature. And now let's ask ourselves some other questions, for perhaps we have made a great big mistake. There are other desert places in our experience, aren't there? Too often we are unhappy and mentally unwhole. Too often we lack the good things of life. And is it going too far to say that too often we are burdened with physical diseases that need never have been? It doesn't seem at all strange to me that we ask these questions. Why shouldn't God take care of all our needs? Why shouldn't the power that put us here provide for us? Surely every research in science is an attempt to answer this question. Every new invention and all the things we think of that belong to modern life are a result of coming better to understand the laws of nature and how they work, of learning how to comply with these laws in such a way that they not only will but must work for us. And now let's consider some other laws which are just as natural as the ones we have been talking about. The laws of mind and spirit. And why shouldn't we inquire into them and find out how they work and learn to comply with them with this definite end in view, that we shall live a fuller and a happier life? But of course, before we can use these laws of mind and these laws of spirit, we must believe that they really exist and that we are supposed to use them. Now, this introduces a new idea, and one that we are not all too familiar with. And so we think of the laws of mind and spirit too often as something beyond or outside the realm of nature. And very often, in our sincere desire to do right and to be right, we are a little afraid of the thought that we are rooted in pure spirit and can actually draw on a divine power and use it for a definite purpose. Well, you and I happen to be explorers. Explorers in an adventure of faith in the invisible. We believe that all things are possible to God, and that God intends us to be whole and happy. We are just beginning to learn that the laws of mind and spirit are real. They can be used for definite purposes. And we have found a key to the use of these laws. And this key is faith. Now, at first, this perhaps seems like rather an abstract thing, a proposition hard to understand. But this is because we haven't been experimenting with it. We haven't come to realize that even faith must act as a law. And yet, we have before us the great example of Jesus. Jesus, who based everything he did on a complete, unshakable faith in the goodness and the love of a power greater than we are. Jesus could not have used his faith, not the way he did, if he had been completely convinced that it was unnatural or wrong. You see, Jesus really expected God to help him. And if we were as sure of our position as he was of his, we would expect to receive the same answers. But why is it that we are not sure of our position? The answer is simple enough. We haven't yet learned to try our faith. We haven't experimented with it enough. And we haven't prepared our minds to accept not only that all things are possible to God, but that it is also possible for us to cultivate such a faith in divine power that it will meet our human needs. Well, did St. Paul say, "Your faith should not stand in the wisdom of man, but in the power of God." And right now, we are in this position. We do believe in a power greater than we are, and we do believe that it is ready and willing to meet our needs. But we are just now beginning to learn how to hook this power up with our needs and with what we are doing. We are beginning to understand the relationship of this power to our belief and to our faith. But this isn't a new idea. For thousands of years ago, it was stated that as a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. And Jesus had said, "As you believe, so is it done unto you." Now, this is why, even though a man might be afflicted with a physical illness, that we tell him to reach beyond the present condition and to believe in perfect health. Not only to believe in perfect health, but to believe in it for himself. Our beliefs are the things that direct this power of good. But we do not have the kind of belief that we have by accident. Each and every belief has been formed by previous experience until it has become a habit of thought. And because this is true, we see the possibility of changing our old beliefs and forming new ones until they too become a habit of thought. This is what we mean by scientific prayer and by affirmative meditation. For, of course, our prayers and meditations do not really change the divine nature. They merely put us in a position to better use it. And now let's consider just how we should use this law of good and see just what it is that might be obstructing its flow through us. And in doing this, the very first things we come up against are the habits of thought that we have had for so many years, thoughts that deny the possibility of the good we wish to experience, as though something arises from within our own minds and says, It's too good to be true. Or nothing good could happen to me. Or I don't understand how to use this law anyway. Or I am not good enough to use it. It is no wonder that the Bible said that a man's enemies shall be those of his own household. But here is a blessing in disguise. For if our real enemies are our own thoughts, we at least have located them. We now know just what they are and how they work and how to change them. Yes, the very fear we have had can be converted into faith, and the misuse of the law of life which has produced bondage can as easily bring about our freedom. We must know that it not only can, it will. The first thing we have to learn then is to convert every negative attitude into a positive one, every fear into a faith, every uncertainty into assurance. There is nothing difficult to understand about this. Rather, it is its very simplicity that eludes us. Wasn't hard for the early settlers to realize that if they could get water on the desert, it would spring forth into fruitage. They understood this well enough. And what they had to seek out were the sources from which the water flowed, the deep subterranean passages, and the high mountaintops and the clouds that floated over them, and the great will of nature to create. Let us apply this to our mental and our spiritual lives, realizing that nothing can oppose us but our own belief. Let's carefully watch our thoughts, sort of listen to the way our minds are working. Surely we will be surprised at the negative statements we are making about ourselves and each other and the possibilities of life. We shall be surprised how many times every day we are denying the law of good, and we shall be equally surprised when, after converting our negative thoughts into positive ones, how easily the law of good works for us. Now, in actual practice, we take a few simple statements every day and think about them until they are real to us. For instance, let's say that when we awake in the morning, we do so with this thought: this is the day that God has made, and I am going to be glad in it. And then when the thought comes up which says, as it might, well, after all, you haven't very much reason to be glad. Right here is where we must be on the alert. Say to ourselves, but yesterday is gone forever. This is a new day. If you do this, very soon you will discover that when a negative thought comes up, by flatly denying it, you remove its power. When you affirm its opposite, you not only build up a resistance to the negative thought, you actually convert it into a positive power. For you see, fear and faith are but two ways of thinking. Each uses the same power. So you are not fighting an adversary. All you are doing is rearranging your thoughts. And when the thought comes and says, what reason have I to suppose that I could be happy and whole today? Just tie your mind right back to the idea that you are one with God, one with all the life and presence and power there is, and affirm that God in you is happy. Let us believe with Jesus that it is the Father's good pleasure to give us the blessings of the kingdom. Remembering that life gives us these things through our beliefs and thoughts. And so let us be diligent in the way we think. Let us be careful to see that the thoughts that flow from our minds are thoughts that are like our highest idea of good, thoughts of health, of beauty, of peace, and of life. These are thoughts about the kingdom of God, and it is this kingdom alone that can free us from our fear and set us safe on a new life and a new light.
For thine is the kingdom and the power and the glory forever. Amen.
Friends, here is a remarkable letter we just received from San Anselmo, telling us of the gratitude of the writer for the inspiration she is receiving from the course of lessons we are sending her. She says that she is filled with gratitude and joy for the good they have brought her. She wishes to make it more and more a part of her life. Well, this is what I call cooperation. And all that she has to do is to apply these lessons every day and apply them to every problem that confronts her. For you see, we are not depending on ourselves, but on a power greater than we are, a power that knows how to do everything. It is a great release to the burdens of life when we realize that we actually can use a power greater than we are. Nothing is more wonderful than the proof of this power in everyday living. This I know our friend is receiving. And because she is receiving so much good, I hope that she is extending it to others. I think it would be wonderful if she would gather a group of her closest friends once a week and explain these lessons to them. And I might say this to all of you. You are engaged in a new and a brave and a wonderful adventure. Begin to share it with others, and do so immediately, for you will find a great strength in uniting your spiritual conviction with that of others.
In a moment, Dr. Holmes will bring you his meditation for today. But first, here's an important reminder. If you would like to learn more about how God will meet your needs for a happier and more abundant life, be sure to enroll at once in Dr. Holmes' splendid home study course of the air. To date, more than 10,000 grateful men and women are receiving the benefits of this course on how to use the power for good. This week, a letter or postcard addressed to This Thing Called Life, Los Angeles 5, will bring you Lesson 5 in this helpful and instructive series. Lesson 5 is entitled, How to Bring Forth Your Good. It is full of practical, helpful ideas on how you may use the God mind in the universe for every good purpose. Send for Lesson 5 without fail this week and study it carefully. Remember, it is yours absolutely free for the asking. And here is a special announcement directed to you newcomers in our AIR congregation. If you have not yet enrolled in Dr. Holmes' second home study course, you may receive all the lessons from the beginning by sending your requests to This Thing Called Life, Los Angeles 5. Avail yourself of this wonderful opportunity for spiritual advancement by sending for this new lesson series at once.
Let us take as the thought for our meditation today these words of Jesus. With God, all things are possible. And let us see if we cannot make these words real to us as we quietly affirm, I am now established in infinite life. My mind and my heart are open to the infinite good. I have no fear, nor doubt, that can in any way turn aside or reject the blessing which the Father hath for me. My body is alive with the life of God. which life is whole and perfect. My mind is established in God. I am led by the divine spirit, and I know that my paths are directed from good to ever greater good. The harmony of God brings me into peace with everything. The abundance of God prospers me in all that I do. The beauty of God brings beauty into my life. And I know that the presence of God, which now fills my mind, blesses everyone I meet wherever I go. The quiet power of peace within me touches the heart of everyone I meet, bringing to all an assurance and a renewed faith in God.
Open my eyes that I may see fullness of truth thou hast for me. Place in my hands the wonderful key that shall unclasp and set me free. Silently now I wait for thee. Ready, my God, thy will to see. Open my eyes, illumine me. Spirit divine.
Join us next week when Dr. Holmes' topic will be How to Have Security. And remember to send for Lesson 5 in Dr. Holmes' second home study course entitled How to Bring Forth Your Good. This lesson shows you how you can use the power for good in the universe to bring you any good thing in life that you desire. Like all lessons in this new 12-lesson series, Lesson 5 is yours absolutely free for the asking. Write to This Thing Called Life, Los Angeles, 5. Our soloist today was Fred Guthrie with Irma Glenn at the organ. This program was directed by Wallace Bruce Ramsey.
There is a power for good in the universe greater than you are, and you can use it.
This Thing Called Life with Dr. Ernest Holmes is a non-profit, non-denominational service brought to you each Sunday in the interests of greater fellowship and spiritual understanding. You are invited to send your free will gifts and offerings for the support of this program to This Thing Called Life, Los Angeles, 5. Bill Davidson speaking. This program came to you from Hollywood.
For more spiritual content like this, visit scienceofmindarchives.com.